all about it. We're not going to post it on the internet or anything.
Don't say anything too disparaging about anyone.
Yeah. It kind of helps if we have to look things up later. So, you guys can go ahead, I think.
Okay.
Okay.
So start with customization.
Yeah. So I didn't send it in the email, but one question I had was when I try and do a git pull, it has problems because I've modified the makefile for our file structure and everything.
Right.
I tried using git stash, but like I don't know if I'm not doing it right or.
Well, so you can use the stash mechanism to sort of get rid of local changes. I don't know if there actually is with the new, how to put it, everything should now be configurable at the config file level. And if you're making modifications to the make file, I'm not even sure there's a make file extant anymore, honestly, in Amigo.
Yeah, well, so I haven't updated it in a couple months. Like, you sent an email out a couple weeks ago about, hey, it's all YAML files. We've kind of done away with make files. I haven't updated past that, to that point.
Yeah, that'd be a good thing, I think, just because.
Yeah, so everything now should. So one of the neat tricks that we have in Amigo now is that it doesn't actually roll out onto the file system anymore. It's all contained within the repository that you run it in. So there should be no sort of...
And none of the targets are checked in, so in general. So you shouldn't get this kind of git stash problem.
There is one thing that I'm still causing git stash problems with, okay. But it's very minor compared to the way it used to be. Some of the JavaScript files will like remake themselves in a new environment,
mm-hmm.
and those there's like six JavaScript files, so I'll just throw them out at some point.
Okay.
But yeah, when you do the... Everything is run out of gulp file and gulp build now, as well as, I think, well, Chris is updating too, and it's awful slow. So hopefully all of that should be gone and done away with. I believe I've updated the documentation to reflect the new system fairly well.
Okay.
And production has just recently figured it out, gotten it rolling. So hopefully it's fairly well described, but if there are any problems, lingering problems, let me know.
Okay. Is it a big enough change that I should just kind of move my old install out of the way and then do a fresh git pull and then work on modifying it? Or
I couldn't say. I don't know how far you've gone modifying down that road, but there is
it's not too much.
The file should be in. Yeah.
Okay.
The make files are done.
Well, I guess what I'd suggest is maybe you keep what you've done on some kind of branch, just so it's there, and then just do a kind of fresh checkout.
Yeah. You can just also make a new fork too.
Yeah, new fork. Yeah.
And you could maybe port some of you can cherry pick some of your changes over from the old fork to the new fork, or just make a new branch and just have that merge with.
Like I said, I haven't actually worked that much on the customizing other than using our own OWL files, our own association files. And I've been loading those through the make file, but if that's changed, then, you know, I'll figure out how the new way.
Yeah, the make file is gone. I think the other big change too is that we bundle the OWL tools jar with the repository, so there should be no separate building, and there should be no more weirdness of things getting out of sync, because that has caused many problems for many people.
Yes, I saw that problem that I complained about several months ago. Someone else finally kind of...
Well, it finally bit us, too, because everything just got so far out of sync, and it was actually someone from, USC, I guess, that actually figured it out, so...
I followed the Git tracker on it.
Yeah, good, good. Yeah, so hopefully that's all worked out now.
Yeah, I mean, updating after Hideko fixed the one thing, then, yeah, it seemed to fix it for me, too. So
how soon are you thinking of rolling something like this out? Would you be interested in working off of master for the time being or working off of 2.3x, which we just put in production? So we just branched off for production, but there's a couple of changes that I think would be useful to have for the things that you're doing, and be easiest for me just to apply them to master. If you're comfortable just sort of working on master for a bit for your
I'm comfortable with that as long as, like I said, I can work out how to keep my local changes consistent. But it sounds like if it's master, that's going to be easier anyways. So
Yeah, it should be. Much more effective.
Yeah, I mean, we have the one Amigo 2 site up. Ponkage wants me to get the main site actually go ahead and moved over because it's still running on 1.8 for Plantium. He wants me to go ahead and get that updated too, and we might as well just do kind of everything at once. I'm having to talk to the sysadmin on my side because he gets kind of weird if I try and start services on my own. And he's not getting back to me on having a separate solar instance up. Unless there's a way to run them all out of a single solar instance, but I don't know if that's
possible. I mean, you can run... So we've had people actually do this running solar not on a server-level jetty, but just running it on an embedded jetty right out of sort of solar. Mm-hmm. So you could go ahead and do that. But, I mean, still opening up new ports and everything.
And okay, I mean, I think that's kind of what I did, because I did have a second instance up and running and just on a separate port.
Right.
My sysadmin's problem is setting a new systemd or init.d startup for it.
Yeah. I mean, so actually for us, we just have it running at the system level jetty. So if jetty comes up, solar comes up as well. One of the things you want to be careful of, depending on your user base, is you ideally want solar to be accessible on port 80. So whether or not you're doing something with Apache and subdomains or whatever.
I've been using Apache proxy setup.
Okay, good. Yeah. As long as you have port 80 available, that's going to be a huge help. Because we've discovered that when people do setups without everything over port 80, sometimes users get blocked off of certain sort of application bits.
Okay, well, let me make sure I understand what you're saying. Right. So the way that I've been doing is I kind of followed your installation guidelines from quite a while ago for solar.
Okay.
It's running on port 8983. It's just kind of a Java, job.
Right.
And then in the Apache config, I have a bunch of proxy and proxy reverse settings going to the slash solar directory are going to the 8983 port.
And they're name-based, so you'd have like solar.plantium.org or something, and that would...
Yeah, well, I have dev.plantium.org/solar.
Okay, and that would proxy pass back from port 80 to 8993 or whatever.
Yeah, and as far as I know, that works, because if you go to dev.plantium.org/solar,
it
gets you into the solar.
If you don't have a configuration like that, sometimes what happens in the interactive parts of Amigo, you're no longer able to, when people have certain Wi-Fi blocks and certain installations, that prevents interactivity with the server in some cases.
And I think our campus actually blocks 8983.
So another thing you want to think about too, just in general, we've never had a problem with it, and you probably won't have a problem with it too, but solar has no authentication authorization system on it, and theoretically someone could just rewrite your database.
Yeah, I know. I've thought about that, and I don't like normally doing it, but I'm kind of going with the security through obscurity. Did I lose you guys?
I can still hear you.
Okay. Well, their video froze.
They were kind of...
Let me just try to switch them to live.
That's uploading. Okay, I'll kill you.
All right. Sorry, I don't know if you guys heard that.
So yeah, could you give the last 15 seconds again? Sorry.
I don't normally like doing it, but I've kind of been going through on the solar kind of through obscurity. No one's going to get to it.
That's what we've done too. We also happen to have a very simple Nginx configuration with Nginx acting as the reverse proxy server instead of Apache that blocks out everything that's not to select. So it essentially functions by blocking everything that's not a legitimate query.
So, right. Well, I mean, if you're leaving out or letting them do select, it doesn't really matter, right? I mean,
well, no, because the select endpoint is the query endpoint, but there's also like update and sort of upload endpoints that are made available. So someone could just go ahead and like do an update on an affected server and blow you away, or send admin commands directly to your solar server remotely. Right? Select is actually safe as far as I know. So by blocking everything but select, you prevent any kind of remote manipulation, which is...
Right. I mean, that's kind of what I was saying, because you don't really care if anyone outside is running a select.
Yeah, select is fine. Select is fine.
Right. You want them to not be able to do update or insert or...
erase file system or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. So,
just before we leave solar, any other tips in terms of like how much memory to allocate? I know since your one is a little bit on the sluggish side, maybe.
Well, so right now, because for the dev environment, it's just running on our dev server, which is actually a lower hardware. It's still 32 gigs of RAM.
Is it using all 32, or is it just?
I don't know, because it's also, I mean, it's running a lot of our dev websites and our SVN and all kinds of stuff. Here, I can look and see what the settings are right now.
Oh, you can also, at some point, you might want to, oh, never mind.
When we go to the live one, I'll have a run on our other server, which has got 128 gigs RAM.
Yeah, just make sure that whatever the container is that you're using has all the RAM available for the solar, and the solar is configured to use all that RAM.
Okay, I'll have to double check.
We can help out with that, too. We've played around a lot with it.
Yeah, I know with the solar, like, I could not do the full NCBI taxon load, and because you guys said it would take like 100 gigs of RAM to do that. So we've been running kind of a slimmed down set of it that just I.
Yeah, actually, that's what we've been doing too, but more just for usability purposes, because when you have the full NCBI and you're trying to browse the ontology, the NCBI stuff can sometimes be very dominant, and it's hard to sort of browse it. So. But we have another fix. Oh, that works.
There might be something else going on right now, because right now I can't even get to our web server.
Yeah.
Well, the Japanese does display okay in some cases, but not in others.
Yeah, it's just
somewhere else in the pipeline.
Yeah. We're going to fix your Japanese rendering. And also, if you need Japanese translations.
Yeah, no.
How's your plan to next set?
Not at all. I could brush up on it.
Yeah, the Japanese, at least I've noticed on my end, that they're fine as long as I go in and manually change the encoding on my browser.
Well, we have this neat one for like, what are we on, Leaf?
Leaf, if you're on a page, it fails. But if you do just a search here, go here, and just type the string Japanese, because you embed that in the synonym itself.
You can share your screen.
And, yeah, I'm not really sure where you guys are talking about either.
Oh, okay, sorry.
He was sending it to the chat screen, so. Right.
But you can share your screen with this Zoom.
Okay. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to download something?
That would be handy.
Probably when I joined that, I think.
Okay, there it comes, yep.
So this all looks nice.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're on an actual page,
Try. I know on mine it'll look fine there, but I have to change. I have to manually change the encoding.
Yeah, that shouldn't be necessary, I don't think. Yeah. I'm guessing it's just some kind of like escape thing happening in one and not the other.
Well, probably in the Perl. The Perl's not dealing with the UTF-8 or something.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Although that's weird, because Perl's usually pretty good about it. Anyways, we can if you open a ticket, we can take a look at that.
Okay.
It's not super high on our priority list, because you can fix it in your browser easily, but wouldn't hurt to have it working for everybody.
That should work, but it's not. Anyways, go ahead and open a ticket with the Leaf example, and we can kind of figure out at it. I'm usually pretty good about the encoding stuff, so it's a little disappointing that it doesn't work. Anyways, yeah, so that's...
Yeah, I know on the old Amiga, for the Plant Ontology site, I had to go in a bunch of the Perl pages and do a use 8 all over the place to get it to work right. And you still had to set it on the browser. It was...
Yeah, okay. Keep in mind.
I kind of feel like the people that are going to care about it are going to already have their encoding set properly on the browser, but maybe not.
Yeah.
But it would be kind of nice to just have it happen automatically.
No, seriously, open a ticket.
Okay, I'll open a ticket for it.
Here.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, while we were talking about the solar stuff, a little bit, I've kind of mentioned it before in an email, but we're working on a project where we wanted to be able to do some statistics with stuff from the annotations, and we want to be able to get things like how many annotations are annotated to this term,
right?
How many annotations are there total? How many annotations are there to all parent terms?
And this is to do term enrichment.
To do the term enrichment stuff.
Yeah, we should will the people doing that be there in Corvallis when we're there?
They should be. I mean, they're in the CS department at OSU, and I'll just make sure they're there.
Well, I don't know if we have much time to help with that before then, but you know, at the moment, what we do for term enrichment is we use a separate service. But we're kind of like experimenting with kind of doing that directly over Solr. So yeah, it's exactly the same kind of things.
Right. I mean, because I know like in MySQL, I could probably just build a query that could do it. Mm-hmm. And it seems like I should be able to do that in Solr. I'm just having...
You can. There's actually an issue. The reason we did not pursue it right away over Solr is because they're just the nature of the document store. There's sort of an iterative nature to it that we wanted to avoid that isn't there in better versions of Solr. So we kept kicking it down the road to a better version of Solr, but there's no reason it couldn't be done fairly quickly.
So you're saying if you move to Solr 4?
5 actually is where we're going to jump to.
Okay.
But it can be done pretty easily in 3. It's just there's an iterative nature to it. It's just sort of vaguely irritating, but it's not a big deal.
Like it'll have performance issues with how many?
Oh, we never tried it. Never the right time or the right place, but like there's nothing inherently wrong or hard about doing this. It's just there would be irritatingly iterative.
Okay. Well, I'll tell them to make sure that to show up.
Okay, cool.
And we can talk about it. Okay.
Okay, so should we talk about the customization?
Yeah, so I think, the main thing on that was it seemed like there should be a way to just set like a templates folder so that I don't have to overwrite.
Before we jump in, maybe let's just check what our, we don't really have kind of like written down what our requirements here are for customization, but I think we have a kind of sense of it, but let's maybe just check. And I kind of think of it as 3 aspects. One is the set of ontologies and associations that you're loading. The other is the look and feel, which I guess encompasses both things like style sheets and coloring, mm-hmm. as well as maybe some site-specific text. And then the third is links.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds about... I mean, there's probably other little things in there, but that covers the majority of what...
And also, some functionalities that might be handy, which is associated with links, but...
Yeah.
Okay, we're back.
About the filter thing quite a bit, but...
I only just plugged in.
Oh, go for wire.
Yeah.
We might lose connection.
So that... Well, you guys go ahead.
Did we lose him?
Oh. Hello?
Well, I think they were turning their Wi-Fi off, so it might take them a second.
Yeah, what's going on? They were turning the Wi-Fi off?
Yeah, I think they realized they were the ones having problems with the connection. Or at least on my end, I was having problems hearing them sometimes.
Yeah, me too. It was not the best audio, that's for sure.
While we're waiting for them, I did find out on the filters, you can select multiple ones, but it's reverse of the way you think. You need to...
I couldn't understand what you said there. You can select multiple ones?
Yeah, but it's the opposite of the way you think. Instead of being able to select multiple plus ones, you have to use the minus sign to remove all the ones you don't want, which isn't necessarily the best way to do it, but it is a way to do it.
Oh, I wasn't even aware of that being an issue. Let me play with
you. Well, you sent me a thing about, let's see.
It was related to the thing of it not saving the filters?
No, not that one.
I see what you're talking about, right? Because as soon as I select like the trait ontology,
right,
then the ontology source field is empty. So what you're
right.
saying is...
But what I'm saying is if you use the minus,
right.
you can
so you're
remove...
Saying if I wanna, oh, that just came back. Oh, now you're sure. Yeah. So you just take off all the others.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, for like the taxon, for the ontologies, that's not a huge deal. But for the taxons, there's like 50 or 60 of them. So it would be annoying if you're trying to do just two species or something. So just letting you know, there was a way to do it, but it's not obvious.
So where do I see the taxons? You were saying?
Oh, under the, if you go to the annotations instead.
Right. So I'm in the ontology. Let me go to annotations. So are we just waiting for them to call back?
I guess.
Chris, let me call him on Skype. Oh, I guess I could pause the recording too. So first you talk about the templates, and then you have the discussion about the mappings or the XREFs. So that's really important.
Right. It looks like they have the functionality there. It's just a matter of...
So we would have to use a common YAML file with them, or we create our own?
No, we can create our own. Although it would maybe be a good idea to push it up for them. Or put in a pull request to pull ours. We can ask them which way they want us to do it.
And I guess this is, I don't know if this is Chris or Seth answering. It says, depending on the exact use, the YAML files are only part of it. We also have all sorts of customizable low-level overrides for various display handlers.
Yeah. I'm not really sure what he means by that either.
Oh, they're coming back, he says. Okay. I mean, we could just possibly add on to this YAML file.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they would prefer to go. So Justin, the code that you're creating for the local instance of Amigo, are you storing it on GitHub somewhere?
No.
Probably should be. Wouldn't that be a better thing to do with it?
Well, but not really, because it's heavily localized for our install.
Right. But it just seems like it would be good to have it in
I'll hang up in my
version controlled place. No, I don't know what it is exactly, but maybe I'm out to lunch.
Well, no. So the normal way to do configuration files is you have them in Git, but you have first thing you need to do is take a makefile.git and move it to makefile. That way it's not controlled by Git. You make your local changes to it, and then it's not under version control because the only one who needs it is you. And I've been changing it frequently enough that it's not a good idea to have in version control.
So you just keep it on your hard drive, or you have it on the server?
It's on the server.
Oh, okay.
Can you hear us?
Yes.
Okay, great. Sorry, we're back. We had some networking issues and we switched computers and installed plugins.
Yes, just went for coffee or something without us.
Apologies, but we're back. So I think, if you're in the middle of talking about something, we can let you go there, or we can just pick up with the three different configuration points.
No, we were just going back about having my changes to local makefile and how to store those, whether or not to do pull requests back to you guys for them. But
I don't think
that's a good idea. But
right, so there's no makefile anymore. Everything should be contained in the configuration file. So there's no things like ontologies that you load and gene product files that you load, that should all be controlled from these central configuration files.
Right. And are those configuration files stored in Git? Because what I've seen before is people do first thing you do after you do the install is you have a makefile.git file and you move that to makefile and then you do your changes and then it's not in Git, but you still have the Git version to.
So essentially we have a ton of example makefiles that we actually use for real, but you have to move some kind of one of those configuration files into the home directory essentially before it works. So there's no collision anymore. you could just commit it separately and it'll never collide.
Okay. That's kind of what I thought. Yeah. But yeah, the previous one, or you know, the version that I have right now has just make file. And if I make changes to it, then it messes up.
Yeah.
The Git. So. Okay.
So as far as like the data and stuff goes, that should all be taken care of by the central configuration file. As far as like skinning and colors and different templates and stuff like that goes, there is currently an unexposed central variable that controls the template path and things like that. And so we could just go ahead and add that back to the configuration file as well. So you could basically just have a separate path in there for like Plantium. And that would be something that you have on your fork that would never appear in anyone else's fork.
That's kind of what I was figuring. It's like take the templates directory, copy it to Plantium-templates, pack it to whatever I want, and just point Amigo at that template directory instead of...
So there might actually be a little bit more work just to make sure you had your own individual CSS files and the like, but it wouldn't actually be that large an extension off of that. And this is why I was asking if you're okay working off of master, because this is something we could sort of hack towards real fast. It shouldn't take very long, and then that would give you a permanent clear path to make arbitrary modifications to skinning and templates without ever having to worry about going out of sync with us.
All right, perfect. That sounds great. I mean, like I said, I don't mind, you know, staying current with you guys as long as you guys are willing to hold my hand a little bit with some of it.
Oh, no, not at all. We like doing that. It's good to get the software used by other sites. And so what we do just for our own stuff is we have a quote-unquote sort of production branch that we maintain, and then we have a master branch, and all the development happens on the master branch for the time being.
Right. I noticed that actually it looks like your main site is still on Amigo 2.2.
Actually, it should have bumped to 2.3x.
Well, it was a couple weeks ago that I noticed it, so maybe it bumped.
I'm not entirely sure where it is right now, but... But yeah,
and I don't know where it came from, but mine says I'm on 2.4.1.
Yeah, it's an arbitrary string. That is a long story behind that too, but it's moved back in time slightly. So
okay. And
then what was the third point? So there's data configuration, there's
and like all the mapping links. So
the mapping links. Okay, so that's a little trickier, and that's actually the one case where
I'm not sure.
Say something about from my point? So throughout the old Amigo 1.5 way of doing it with NameMuncher, that I understood very well, but I understand that's a terrible way of doing it. The 1.8 way seemed to be it would download a file from CVS from you guys that was kind of like a master list of all XFs, and then would just go through, and it had a standardized format, and we've actually been saving our stuff in that same format anyways.
Right.
But when I wanted to add our own, I would just go in, download it from CVS, tell it to stop downloading from CVS, and then put in my local changes.
Right.
Then from your email, it sounds like you have a new YAML file to take care of some of this. Is it the same kind of, you have a global YAML file for all XRefs for everyone?
Essentially, yeah.
Okay. So if we want to add stuff to it, should we be doing like adding to it and then putting in pull requests so that it goes back upstream?
That would be all right, right?
I think so, yeah.
I think that would be all right. I mean, as long as there's no collision and it's sort of...
So this is our DBX, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be one way of attacking it. So the mechanism is similar to the way it used to be, except it's more YAML oriented and there's overrides that are a little bit more exposed instead of having to hack straight into NameMuncher.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially it goes and gets the DBX refs file from a server somewhere. If it can't do that, it just grabs a local copy. So it'd be fairly easy just to make sure that it always aimed at the local copy and never even attempted to get one from
the
copy. And that's
we're happy to take a new DBX ref interface and go one.
Okay. I mean, like, I know a lot of ours are ones that probably would be fine, the PO Git, TO Git, that kind of stuff. But we also have like AP Web. I mean, I think we have like 50 to 100 ones that we've been adding over the years.
I mean,
yeah.
And I don't have a problem. I mean, as far as I know, there's no private ones or anything like that that we need to worry about. It's just which way would you rather do it? Do you want them up there for you, for everyone, or?
I mean, it's certainly the more logical, clean way of doing it is to sort of globally sort of deal with that. I mean, the thing you'd have to worry about then is sort of you're farming out some of your ID resolution upstream. And that may in some circumstances mean that you have a harder time getting a pull request in or fixing something that's gone south. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of an issue at your, I mean, sort of it, by pushing that thing upstream, you make it cleaner, but you also lose one degree of control over it.
Right.
But I think in general, we'd be fine accepting more data in there. I mean, it's just, it's data for resources. And as long as it's not conflicting with what we already have in there, I don't think there'd be a problem.
Okay.
What if there is a conflict, though?
Well, what kind of conflict would there be then?
Well, I mean, you've said that like twice, like as long as there wasn't a conflict. So you tell me what kind of conflict there would be.
Well, I would say as a programmer, he's just saying there could be conflict here.
Right.
Well, not realistically, but, you know, programmatically, there could be something.
So let's say you have some. So there's no sort of universal registry of IDs. So it's theoretically possible that some ID, like quote unquote ID space that you have in your data is already taken by something that is already taken by ours.
Like say the people in France really wanted to have CO to be the proper ontology.
I'm sorry, Chris, I can't hear what you're saying. Could you go closer to the mic?
So an example might be if the people in France really wanted to use CO as a global crop ontology prefix, and you wanted to register that, that's quite likely to conflict with something else because someone else might claim CO.
Yeah, and I could envision things like I can see, I was looking at the MazeGDB XREFs in your YAML file, and I need to kind of cross-reference them with what we're using, but we might have problems like the name. You know, the tag might be the same.
Yeah, so there's issues like that.
And actually sharing them will probably have advantages because we've been having issues with MazeGDB because they're weird.
Yeah, they recently changed their website around, so all the URLs changed, yeah.
So it seems, let's just fix this right through twice.
Yeah. I kind of think that having the idea of having the common one is good as long as it works for, you know, if it's easy for Justin to deal with.
We can at least start that way.
All I care is that they work, right? So
yeah. Let's just start out trying to see if we can unify them. Mm-hmm. And if that works, that's awesome. And if it doesn't work, then we can just use one of the other methods. But even if it didn't work, it's not a big deal just to sort of have it aim locally instead of on the web.
Yeah.
That's just a configuration switch flip.
So right now, is the Amigo 2 instance that we have running right now, is it looking at that YAML file, or is it so that the ones, we could test the ones that are in there? Or is that something that you have to set? Like if I go to one of our annotations, I'm going to get to it here. So if I go to, I'm going to just look at MazeGDB here. This is slow. If I click on the GrimSim number. Yeah, so right now it's like for the MazeGDB, the GrimSim number is still going to their archive site, so that needs to be updated.
Yeah.
Because they've changed, they've come out with a new, and we just went through all of this with the PO release, updating all of these. So we have the new links. We just have to figure out how to work with you guys to update them.
Yeah, so I mean, the easiest thing to do, assuming that we're going ahead with the sort of unification, would be to put in a fork. Actually, can I chat? There
we go. How do I get to the map?
Let me send you a link real fast. The easiest way would be to just fork that repo, and in there in the metadata directory is the go dbxrefs Go DBXRF YAML file and just put a pull request against that. And then we have like a Travis job that makes sure that it sort of passes a certain set of unit tests to make sure it's all grammatically correct and everything is unique. And so theoretically, if you do a pull request, it should auto-check itself in Travis, and then if it's clear, it should be okay to just automatically pull in, essentially. I think that's the way it works.
Okay. Is there a, can I hack the YAML files directly, or is there a recommended tool to be?
Oh, so the recommended way would be fork the repository and then do a pull request back to the main site.
Sorry, I mean the actual editing of the YAML file.
Oh, just hack it however, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
What I do a lot of the time is I just do the GitHub web interface. I don't even bother.
What was that, Chris?
That's actually pretty good.
I didn't hear that.
Fork this project. He's saying that rather than even download it through GitHub, we can just edit it directly to the browser on GitHub and then...
On your own fork, you just edit it directly. But you wouldn't want to do that for 100 things. But if you were just adding a single thing, that would be the easiest way of doing it.
Okay. And yeah, I'll have to go through it and see which ones are missing and whatnot. Okay.
Yeah.
That definitely looks doable.
And in addition to that linking, there's also sort of this concept of sort of these more subtle overrides that you can do on a column-by-column basis inside a lot of the displays that's handled in JavaScript, but you might not need that. So we can discuss that if that comes up, but you might be able to avoid that sort of lower level handling.
The only reason I think we might need something like that is we've had a request in before for sometimes we use something like a PO number in a comment and those don't get linked out.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I think they work in the definitions, but not in the comments or something like that.
Oh, neat. Okay. That we might, if that's occurring in the Perl section of the code, there will be a different fix for it than if it's occurring in the JavaScript section of the code. And if it's occurring in both, we could apply it to both. But that would be almost more along the lines of a standard, like just open a ticket for that, and mm-hmm. we can go ahead and fix it. If you're looking for something super specific like that, it might just be easiest to fix it in a ticket. And that should take like 5 minutes. 5 minutes if it's working in one spot but not another. Just copy and paste the code over and like away we go.
So Seth, if we need to open tickets, we do it on this Go site link that you just gave us.
So tickets for the Go DBXRF data is on the Go site tracker.
Okay.
Tickets for the Amigo one is going to be on the Amigo tracker.
Can you post the link to
that, please? It's just GitHub gene ontology and then either Amigo or Go site or it's like term genie.
And, you know, if depending on how you want to roll, if you like, when you make your fork of Amigo, you can set up GitHub so that it's got its own tracker. So if you really wanted to have things, request for things that are only on your branch, like your specific CSS, and you could have them go via the tracker.
Yeah.
But definitely anything that, you know.
We kind of have the tracker set up for that, but we don't have it hooked to a fork of ours. It's just kind of a, if someone has an issue, they send it up, and then it's not hooked to any code. Like, I don't have it set up where I can go, okay, this ticket is fixed in this.
Yeah.
But GitHub is flexible that way, so.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a much better way of doing this over whatever that horrible thing we used to do was. Okay, yeah, I think hopefully that covers the 3 points, and I'll go ahead and I'll try to reactivate the pathing variable. And then maybe we can talk a bit more later on about how to control things like CSS a bit better so you don't have to worry about clobbers. But I think having your own fork should alleviate most of the issues with the CSS at least. And then the templates, you can just go hog wild and never worry about it. And there is a fairly standard way that templates are handled now. They all take the same variable load. So it's pretty easy to write new templates sort of around that framework. So it should be much easier to edit and just sort of make things are standardized across versions than it used to be. At least that's my memory of it. So I'll go ahead and add that new thing.
Should we go ahead and make the fork while we're on the call, just so that?
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, because I was going to say I was going to have to look up how to do that. I haven't really done that before. So.
Yeah, super easy. Just go ahead and do you have a an org? Or do you, are you just going to do it?
Yeah, I have an org. Here, how about I'll share my screen with you guys so you guys can. There we go. See that okay?
Yeah, yeah. I'm just kind of amazed it works at all on my computer, honestly.
So I should go to my org first?
Sure. Let's find out.
And then kind of had one.
Well, just go over to Geontology Amigo. I think you can just move it over to your org when you're done.
From here?
Yeah, and there's fork over in the upper right.
Ah, there we go.
And then you can, yeah, fork it into Plantium.
Oh, that's neat.
There, you're done.
Okay, that was even easier than I thought it would be.
Right, so now you have your own Amigo and your own Amigo tracker for stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, it's not enabled by default? Oh, okay. You can turn on the tracker then.
You go to the settings.
So lower part on the right side.
Down. Right above the HTTP. Yeah, there.
Yeah, and you can just add issues there. And then I think that's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and just head back now, and I think you should be good. I don't think you need that yet. Yeah, so just go back.
Well, I'm just worried if I go back, if it's going to keep the change.
Well, just go. I tried to point at the screen, but it doesn't work.
Funny how that happens.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, issues now. Go back. Great, you have your own issue tracker. So you can also reference Amigo issues from your tracker and vice versa. So if we need to cross-reference them, it's no problem.
Yeah.
So just, yeah, okay. This should all go.
So will this automatically stay merged with current?
Oh, absolutely not. No.
I didn't think it would do it automatically, but I didn't.
No, you'll have to go ahead and probably periodically just go ahead and do a merge with upstream and stuff like that. Well, because they'll have their own changes. Yeah. Yeah, so you don't want to rebase. You'll just probably want to periodically merge with upstream, and you can also choose whether or not you want to follow our production branches or our sort of master development branch. I'd suggest keeping up with the master for now, and then later on, when you're comfortable and you have stuff settled in, we'll go ahead and switch over to sort of a Plantium / our production release and just sort of make sure that everything is settled in nicely. But we'll figure it out as we go.
Okay. Yeah, I think you guys are much more familiar with this GitHub interface than I am. So I got kind of used to the way SVN did everything, and I still kind
of
think that way, and I'm having trouble switching sometimes.
It's
no worries.
Functionality. Got a lot of good functionality.
What's also nice about this is you can easily destroy it and burn it to the ground and just like rebase or refork if you have to, and like no damage, no harm, no foul. So like just go nuts. Break it all before important stuff is in there.
The sandbox.
It's very nice for that kind of thing. Also, we have much more powerful unit tests that I believe should work out of the box now, which is also good fun. You'll probably want to have your own unit test directory as well. Actually, no, you won't even need that. So we have in the directory test app. Yeah. And then we have behave. Ignore Selenium. That shouldn't even be there anymore. Yeah. In behave. And then go into, yeah, so all of these are unit tests that are tuned to the specific branch for us. So you can just go ahead and either make a new test directory or just go ahead and start blowing these away. Or just use different numbers or a different sort of namespace in here. And then just sort of, you can base your own unit tests on this, but these unit tests are sort of tuned towards a certain goaler load and a certain, like, it's doing things like double checking that counts are within a certain range and double checking that certain things appear certain places.
So, one time I suggest we add tests to the agenda for Valis.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble hearing you, Chris.
So Chris was just suggesting that we add tests for things to do at Corvallis, and I can give you a quick tour of the test suite that Amigo uses now, how to sort of work the unit tests. A lot of this stuff is written in Python, and we can just go over that real fast as well.
Okay. You're talking in a couple weeks in Corvallis?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay. How are we set for time here?
I need to leave in like 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, I've got another 15 minutes or so. That's fine.
Okay, so, I mean, anything else you want to talk about while we're...
You guys gave me plenty for now. as usual, I'm sure I'll come back with questions and stuff. But
okay, let's see. Sure, that's right? I don't know. I'd have to actually sit and think about it.
Do you want to stop sharing?
Okay.
Oh, I guess I can stop it.
Ah, every time I go up there, it stops video.
I got it. Oh, no, I don't want to share mine. Cancel.
Okay, great. So do we want to work on sort of things to work on while we're all in Corvallis? Or?
That's probably a good idea. And I have a couple of questions for Chris. And maybe we could talk real briefly about the other sessions. We had a meeting this morning on the ontology call and talked about the agenda. So Chris, I'm going to send out an email to the people that are coming and ask them to get Protégé installed on their computers before they come, so you can do kind of a Protégé demo. Should we have them use the 4.3 version that's out, and or do you want to use 5? Or
I want to use 5, and I'm hoping they would have made a new release of the latest snapshot, but they haven't. So let's wait until, when's the last, I'll try pushing them again, but I can send the URL that people should use to do the installation.
Okay.
Yeah.
When do you think that would be available? By the end of the week sort of thing?
It's very hard to tell to them. They're not that great.
I think we need to, some of these people are leaving, fairly soon, and we want to give them a little bit of advance notice. I don't want to have to be messing around in the session, installing software. And
oh, we're going to be doing that anyway, don't worry.
Yeah, we can try.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But so the you're waiting for a new version of 5?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, in the meantime, though, they could install 4.3 just to kind of play, if they wanted to play around with it before they come.
I'd just go straight with 5, I think.
Go straight with 5, okay. So whatever the current version is on there, they could go ahead and play with. And we'll tell them that there's a new version coming.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So is there any other things that you want people, that you think people should prepare in terms of that?
I can send something out. So I'm going to follow before.
I'm sorry, you're kind of cutting out there for a second.
So I'm going to follow roughly the same structure I used for the Go training course. I'm going to kind of assume people will know some Git. Should I send instructions up? What's your preference as to people knowing command line versus source tree? Because I'll just tell you, I don't really know anything about the UI, the source tree or the UI versions. I'm just going to...
Well, I think it might be good to give them both options. I'm kind of using both.
Okay.
We kind of planned on... I can share the agenda with you here. The agenda's kind of in flux right now, but we do have a version of it. It's on... Hang on one sec here. We were planning to do a GitHub session. So I thought I would ask everybody to get a GitHub ID before they come.
Mm-hmm.
And then we should give them sort of an overview of GitHub before we launch into too much editing. And
yeah, people should definitely have account set up before then. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there is an official GitHub UI as well, but I've never used it.
A GitHub what?
UI, user interface.
Oh, like Git, like, yeah.
GitHub, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have Git on, like Git for Mac on my computer, but I've actually never used it. What's going on here? Oh, hang on. Well, sorry. It got the agenda got kind of taken over to, hang on, let me go to my email. I'm sorry, I didn't have this ready to go. Here we go. It's now in three places, which I'm trying to get it off of three places. Okay, so you should be able to see that now. If I can make it bigger.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go. So we were thinking of doing the GitHub introduction and just like an overview of tools on Monday afternoon, just to kind of get people oriented and yeah. And then on Tuesday, probably doing the Protégé training. How much time is your, and do you have a link to that Go training course?
Yeah, I do.
Maybe you could send it to me.
Yep. I'll send that right now. So it depends what you want people to learn at the end of this. So I think the full course was like kind of 2 days.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know, and it's not like how you do this in Protégé, because at the end of the day, that stuff is easy. It's understanding why you're doing certain operations, understanding what the reasoner is doing, what the reasoner kind of like buys you, how to kind of like debug things using the reasoner, that kind of thing.
Okay.
But that may not, it depends really what the overall strategy is in terms of what would be useful is if, can we have like maybe a spreadsheet of the people involved and what their roles would be in terms of annotation, ontology development?
Yes. It doesn't, well, I have a spreadsheet of who's coming, but it doesn't really say, like, who's
coming. You have a good sense, I mean, of who's,
yeah.
And also just how much work we expect needs to be done. Like, we haven't really synced up a while in terms of, okay, what's the plan for the plant stress and disease ontology, for example, is one that, you know, really benefit from kind of inter-ontology axioms and would really benefit from
that. Yeah, absolutely. And we haven't really talked about that too much.
Mm-hmm. So what are your plans for PO? Is it, you know, do you think it's kind of pretty much good enough and stable, or do you think it requires, you know, do you need a lot of compositional terms in there? Or, you know, what's the general, we could kind of just have a general strategy for each ontology.
Yeah, and that's kind of a big question in terms of whole project. But in terms of what these individual people are doing, so the first session will be, they're going to present their work. But really, to be perfectly honest with you, Chris, you know, these, so if you, can you see the spreadsheet here?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, Marie Angelique, so she's, she knows what she's doing. But like these people, like Vilma Omar, Agbona, Karthika, there's like 1, 2, 3, 4, and Rex has a little more ontology experience, but these four people that are coming basically have, I would say, no ontology experience.
Right, so it would be a bad...
They're working in Excel.
Okay, and what is our plan for how they would work in future?
Well, so we talked about this at the meeting this morning with Pankaj, mm-hmm. because really, you know, I have to sort of defer to his vision. He's thinking that they would be editing the reference ontologies directly. And so we had a little discussion about this. I mean, if that's really a leap for them to do. So one of the, you know, and so this is kind of, I don't know if that's actually a reasonable thing to request of them. They all have these species-specific, you know, crop-specific dictionaries or trait dictionaries that they're working with, and they have terms in there that are mostly TO terms, like traits.
I'm familiar. Yeah, I get the general.
So, you know, I think really in terms of doing too much high-level ontology design with them might be overwhelming.
Yes. On the other hand, I think it would be really beneficial to go in to do the full course with Mary Angelique. But then we only have so many days, and
yeah, and I mean, I would really like to do the 2-day course, but
yeah, you exactly, yeah, you and Mary Angelique. Yeah. But then I don't know, what do we do with everyone else?
Exactly. So I think realistically, I mean, you're going to have to kind of tailor this to, you know, just be aware that these are not people that even use OboEdit.
No, I'm familiar. I understand the issue.
But and you think what we're hoping kind of, that they can do is go through their trait dictionaries, identify all the terms that they need, see if they're in the TO, and if they're not in the TO, kind of learn the process to get them in the TO.
Yeah.
So one of the questions we asked Pankaj today was, you know, do we expect that every single, like there's different, the problem is there's so many different visions of the ontologies, and we haven't really, you know, at this point in the project, we haven't really had a chance to sit down as a team and sort of hash this out.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Barry's vision for the TO is that it should be strictly a reference, species-neutral reference ontology. But if we're adding all these species-specific terms, which there's already a lot of species-specific terms in there, and then, you know, you brought up the point of that we should blow up the whole TO and refactor it so it follows PEDO. So these are kind of like big high-level questions that we really need. And it's sort of hard to go into this with these guest curators and not have those things resolved.
I understand. Do you think we can have some kind of two-string thing? Or
I'm sorry?
Do you think we can possibly have some two streams somehow so that some of us could go into more depth? Then I guess that means that these people are just sitting around doing nothing.
Well, so what we were planning to do, I'll show you what we have on the agenda here. What we're planning to do on this Tuesday morning session, Barry was going to take the curators, those five or six of them, and have like focused like ontology basics theory. You know, he calls it focused ontology training. And then we're going to have like this strategic planning session, which I think we probably need more than an hour, but this is kind of what we were thinking of doing with them on Tuesday morning. And the reason being is that Dennis is going to call in that morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Barry hasn't really spelled out exactly what he wanted to do with them that day, but he has kind of an intro to ontologies plan to talk on Monday afternoon.
Yeah, if they're not experienced with ontologies, I'm not sure what they'll get some kind of high level. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to talk with him again on Thursday about, you know, the level of sophistication in terms of ontologies that they'll have. So, you know, that he can tailor it. But that's kind of the idea. He said he didn't think that he needed to be part of the strategic discussion, although I kind of think maybe he should be, but.
Yeah.
I mean, another plan we could do here is like maybe.
How many days is Mary Angelique here for?
He's going to be there for the whole week.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what about we are more in-depth stuff on, you and I are needed for all the stuff that Justin and Seth can work together on.
Oh, okay.
We can check in occasionally, but we can.
So like on Thursday morning, maybe?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or, well, I'm thinking like at least a whole day of like detailed project training for at least you and Marie Angelique.
Yeah, and I think Marie Angelique is pretty familiar with it. And, you know, maybe, I mean, it wouldn't hurt probably, but, and Austin is interested too.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chris, you don't need to work with Justin and Seth.
Yeah, I mean, we'll need to check in, but we'll I think, you know, then, we'll get a lot done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Seth with an H, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
It was corrected on a different version of it.
It's all good. That's what my French teacher always used to call me.
I know. I'm sorry. This is Pankaj's quick writing yesterday that he put this in. Yeah, and Austin fixed this on the Excel spreadsheet this morning, and then
the coffee spelled wrong too.
Yeah. It's irrelevant.
My training material is quite anatomy centric. So, you know, it uses GoCell component a lot, but okay. It should be very obvious how that transfers to the plant ontology.
Okay.
But once you understand the principles, it's you can do the pizza ontology as well. A lot of it is just getting the basics.
Yeah.
But just so you're aware in advance, you know, maybe I don't have anything in the training material about traits per se. And that's a slightly harder problem in some ways. But in some ways, you need to kind of know the basics of reasoning before you even get into some of the design patterns that we've chosen.
Well, you know, and one of the things that these curators have been working on with Marie Angelique and Leo. So Leo is the other person coming. He's kind of the, I don't know if he's a bioinformatics background person, but he works for the Bioversity. And so he's kind of the person that goes in between. So these curators develop their trait in these trait dictionaries, which are Excel spreadsheets, and then Leo puts them into the crop ontology form on the website. And so we actually had a thing we were going to talk about, this workflow between crop ontology and plantiome, which is really important. And I don't know what Pankaj did with it. I don't know where we're going to put it here, but we did talk about it. And we've been having some discussions with Leo. I can actually show you the...
can I interrupt you?
Really set on Excel. Yes, go ahead.
Sorry, changing subjects back. I'm working on... I created a ticket on my fork. How do you want me to kind of, for the Japanese things... How do you want me to kind of send that back up? Make a duplicate ticket?
Well, actually, you can...
I'm not seeing a way to just push it up the fork.
There's no way of pushing up the fork, but you can reference other tickets, but there's no...
You can assign Seth to it.
I can just assign Seth to it?
No. You can make a team. Yeah, you don't have to have admin on your org.
Right? I'd have to be somehow a member. Yeah, so you could actually, if you added me as some kind of member...
Okay, I don't know if I have you on here. I know I have Chris.
Yeah, and then that way, if you did something like assign it to me, I could do something like I could do all sorts of weird stuff. I could create a ticket then upstream that referenced your ticket and then close them both out when I felt I had a fix or something like that.
What's your GitHub user ID?
Oh, it's KLTM.
Oh yeah, KLTM.
Oh, yeah. I'm afraid I'm going to have to go here. I just want to show Chris this real quick. Am I still sharing my screen?
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I need to go too, but I'll figure out the ticket thing. Thanks. I just wanted to ask that before I left.
Okay. So right. This is the workflow that is going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
So the people that are coming are in this category, the breeder curators. And Leo will be at the workshop with us, which is really important, I think. And so we've been working with them, and we suggested, you know, we're trying to figure out how to fit the GitHub and the Plantiome into this workflow.
Yeah.
And there's quite a bit of resistance, you know, into moving away from the Excel format. And so we've been having some different discussions. This is the Crop Ontology website box here, but what they're basically using right now is Dropbox. So this slide also integrates not only the Plantiome and the GitHub, but the breeding management system, which is really their important function of these files. So this is going to be the basis of some discussion that we have there.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because Pankaj's idea is that these curators will be contributing directly to the ontologies that are at GitHub.
But they can contribute in different ways. So for example, we can have, if we have some level of control of the template, we can just put, for example, some fields in there for PO and PETO term, for example, for different kinds of, you know, we could have it such that there's, so you know, basically the concept of different design patterns. some of the different, you know, we've got kind of EQ patterns in TO, and we've got kind of chemical level patterns and things like that. So if we could have some way that we could kind of add some fields to their template for things like PO terms, KEBI terms.
So their new, the new trait template version 5 that they've been working on developing for all the crops has a column or field, has columns or fields for the EQs. So for...
Right. But for not everything is an EQ, so we may need to, you know, go into more detail there.
Right, right. So they, that's something that Marie Angelique has been working on with this mappings. So yeah. Anyway, I got to run, but I just wanted to kind of put this out there and you kind of be aware of that this discussion will be going on there and that, you know, we kind of need to figure out how to make it work with them. So,
Stick it in the trait ontology tracker referencing this or something. It's just, I find it easier to track things if they're on GitHub. But yeah,
absolutely, so yeah.
Mind you, if you do have things organized in a Google Drive, I should look at that.
I can probably share it with you before that. So I got to run.
All right, guys. I got to go. I'll watch you guys later.
Yeah. Thanks, Justin. Thanks for letting me.
Yeah. Thanks, everyone.
Tune in.